The opinions expressed on all WRCA programs are those of the program producers and do not express the views of WRCA, its staff, or management. This is 1330 WRCA Watertown, Boston, a Beasley Broadcast Group station.
Tall and tan and young and lovely, the girl from Ipanema goes a-walking, and when she passes, each one she passes goes, ah. When she walks, she's like a samba that sways so cool and swings so gentle that when she passes, each one she passes goes, ah. Oh, but he watches so sadly. How can he tell her he loves her? Yeah. Give his heart gladly, but each day when she walks to the sea, she looks straight ahead, not at he. Tall and tan and young and lovely, the girl from Ipanema goes a-walking, and when she passes, he smiles, but she doesn't see. She's like a samba that swings so cool and sways so gentle that when she passes, each one she passes goes, ah. Oh, but he watches so sadly. How can he tell her he loves her? Yeah. Each day when she walks to the sea, she looks straight ahead, not at he. Tall and tan and young and lovely, the girl from Ipanema goes a-walking, and when she passes, he smiles, but she doesn't see. She just doesn't see. No, she doesn't see. She looks straight ahead and just doesn't see.
Welcome to Tube Talk. Thanks for tuning in. And that was Esther Phillips with The Girl from Ipanema. A really neat version of that. What a great voice. And Esther didn't live a very long life, unfortunately passing away in 1984. But she does have a very unique sound, and I really love that version of that song. This is the show for the music lover, the antique radio collector, the person that still is looking for great programming on the AM band. It's all here for you. This is Tube Talk. Here we go, Frank.
Saturday night is the loneliest night in the week, 'cause that's the night that my sweetie and I used to dance cheek to cheek. I don't mind Sunday night at all, 'cause that's the night friends come to call. And Monday to Friday go fast, and another week is past. But Saturday night is the loneliest night in the week. I sing the song that I sang for the memories I usually seek, until I hear you at the door, until you're in my arms once more. Saturday night is the loneliest night of the week. Saturday night is the loneliest night of the week. I sing the song that I sang for the memories I usually see. Until I hear you at that door, until you're in my arms once more. Saturday night is the loneliest night of the week. Until I hear you at the door, until you're in my arms once more. Saturday night is the loneliest night of the week.
At the height of his vocal powers, a very young Frank Sinatra. And, you know, Saturday night is the loneliest night of the week because our regular slot here on Tube Talk is Friday evening, 11 p.m., over the air and streaming on the internet at 1330 a.m. And you just know I got to say this. You have scaled the Mount Everest of the radio world. You have reached the summit, yes, the zenith of the independently produced radio experience. Thank you so much for being with us tonight. If you enjoy the program, tell a friend. We'd love to have a lot of listeners, and I'd love to hear from my listeners. And, you know, it's always something that intrigues me. I always wonder what the ratio is. I do hear from a lot of people, but I wonder, out of everybody who drops me an email or I hear from, how many other people are actually listening. So even if you just listen and you don't really have a message for me, I'd just like to hear you say, you know, hey, I listen, I enjoy the music. Why don't you do this? Why don't you do that? You can drop me an email. It's tubetalk1@gmail.com. Let's spin the wayback wheel to the Bing Crosby program.
Papa Bing, it's very nice to be here and help you kick off your 20th anniversary celebration.
Well, we wouldn't have had a quorum without you, Louie. That's all I know. What kind of a song can we do in
here? Well, I'd like to beat out a little Blueberry Hill for the folks
Blueberry.
There.
You just mentioned a beauty. You come up with a beauty.
I found my thrill on Blueberry Hill. On Blueberry Hill. When I found you, the moon stood still on Blueberry Hill. And it wasn't until my dream come true.
The wind in the willow played love's sweet melody. But all of those vows we made were never to be. So we're apart. Well, you're part of me still. When you were my thrill on Blueberry Hill, I found my thrill.
Come climb the hill with me, Papa Bing.
Give me some of that wheat germ on Blueberry Hill.
You're welcome to it.
On Blueberry Hill.
I'll bring my horn with me.
If you don't bring your horn, we're nowhere.
Yes, I know.
The moon stood still.
Each afternoon we'll go.
On Blueberry Hill.
Higher than the moon we'll go.
And it lingered until.
To our wedding in June we'll go.
A wedding? How'd this get in there? Wedding?
Who knows? Doing and the willows play.
Do you really love me?
Love's sweet melody.
As I love you.
And all of these vows we made were never to be.
The night is true.
Though we were
but with a woman. You bother me still.
Yes, the world is a better place if you could come home and turn on the radio and hear Louis Armstrong and Bing Crosby singing Blueberry Hill. Joseph Rebaugh joins us tonight from his booth on the Radio Attic. We're pleased to have him on tonight. Joe has a background in electronics and is a fine purveyor of vintage radios on the Radio Attic. Joseph, thanks for being with us tonight.
Oh, it's a pleasure, Paul, to be talking to you again.
Well, hey, you know, before we get to your current endeavors on the Radio Attic, maybe we could find out a little bit about how you got interested in radio to start with. Hey, take us back to your earliest entree into the world of radio. When did it all start? When did you get interested?
Well, I started when I was about 12 years old and really got into it when I was about 14. That was the days when you would take the tubes out, and usually it was a tube that was bad, and you'd go to your local hardware store and test the tubes, and if a tube was bad, you'd get a new one for 50 cents and replace the tube. So my mother worked in one of the mills, and she'd bring a radio home that, you know, was broken. Somebody's had a radio that didn't work, and I would check it out, and most of the time it was a tube. So I'd fix these radios for people, and they thought I was a genius, but really all I was doing was testing tubes. But that was the start of it.
Well, hey, it's interesting that you mentioned those tube checkers, you know, when you're experienced with a kid, because I've always wondered on those. Maybe you can shed some light on this. I've heard a lot of people say that those commercial tube checkers were always designed to kind of test the tubes a little weak, so you'd buy a new one. Did you ever find that you were replacing a tube that you didn't have to?
I don't think so, because I never knew of that, but I do know that I did replace tubes and the radios work well. And I did know enough of how to tune them, how to readjust them.
Sure, how to align them, yep.
Yeah.
And let's see, so your start really in the world of radio repair began, let's see, from what I understand, you were in the Navy, and then you had a career with Bendix, so you were always around electronics. And when did you really start to dig in, you know, beyond the tubes and start working with the theory of the sets and working on the guts of it all?
Well, yes, I was in the Navy. I was an aviation electronics technician, and I worked for the Bendix Corporation in aerospace. And about 4 years ago, I was, you know, putzing around on the computer, and I saw these old radios in the radio attic, and I thought, well, I'd like to have one of those. So I bought one. And when I got it, I played it for, oh, maybe a month, and the pilot light went out. Well, when the pilot light goes off, you should replace it because it can damage the circuits in the radio.
Right.
Well, I took the radio apart to replace the bulb, and I noticed that this guy advertised fully restored. Well, he didn't restore it at all. All the old original capacitors were in it. And I think all he did was what I did when I was 14 years old. He checked the tubes, replaced them, cleaned the radio, and sent it out. So then I was at a local antique shop, and I saw an old radio for, oh, I think about $20 or $25. And I brought it home, and I restored it, and I did it the right way. I changed all the capacitors, and I realigned it and all. And that got me started.
Now, you know, it's interesting that you mentioned, you know, you pick something up and, you know, because you talked a little bit about your restoration philosophy, which is really a pretty thorough one, right? Now, you'll go through something, you'll change all the capacitors, look for weak resistors or those that aren't in tolerance. What else do you do? Maybe you can tell us a little bit about your restoration philosophy. How good a going over do you give these radios?
Well, a lot of these old radios, the wiring in them gets very brittle over the years. You can just touch them with a pair of needle-nose pliers, and the coating will shatter, and you'll have a bare wire. Some guys don't replace them. They just make sure they're not near the chassis. I replace every wire that's bad, out of tolerance resistors. I change every capacitor, whether they're good or not, whether they look good, they get changed. And I'm very fussy, because I was upset when I bought that radio and it wasn't done. And I figure if somebody's going to pay me for a restored radio, I want to give them a really restored radio.
Well, that's a great way to be. And, you know, certainly haven't been on the other side of the coin there. You know, you experienced a little disappointment there. And you're talking about the crumbling insulation. I guess there was a certain period when the rubber insulation problem was at its peak, which was that the late 30s, early 40s, when a lot of manufacturers were experimenting with that rubber insulation. They were getting away from the cloth.
That's when it was. It was in the mid-40s, and it is amazing how you can touch some of the wires, and they'll just fall apart. And the interesting thing is, it's usually the red and the yellow colored wires that crumble. Blue wires hold up. I don't know if it's something in the chemicals of the paint, but that is interesting.
No, it is interesting. And, you know, you know what else is kind of interesting as well, and you know, you look at some of these sets, and it's amazing, you know, that the tubes hold up as long as they do. The tubes themselves are just amazing electronic devices, but you know, power cords, capacitors, resistors. You know, if something took a zap of lightning or a current problem, you know, you might have you know, a blown transformer in there as well. So one of the things we always mention to people on the show who might be listening, who are new to the hobby or just, you know, casually interested, you know, it's great if you find something at a swap meet or in your grandmother's attic. But, you know, rule number one here on the show always is, please do not pick up an old antique radio somewhere, go home and plug it in and hope for the best, because the best will not happen. Before you ever play a set that's 50, 60, 70 years old, please have it serviced properly by a competent technician. We want you to be safe. We don't want you to do any further damage to your set or to your house. We really want you to enjoy the hobby, so that's why it's important to seek out a quality technician like Joe Rebar. So, Joe, maybe you could tell us a little bit, how long have you been on Radio Attic? You have a great site. It's very extensive, and I noticed, you know, lately you've been adding in a lot of transistor sets to go with your tube sets, and how long have you been on the Attic?
2.5 years I started selling the radios. What happened was, I started picking up radios and restoring them. I didn't know what to do with them. So I went to a local antique mall and rented a cabinet there, a locked cabinet. And I had like 20 radios in there for 3 months, and I did sell 4 of them. But the disappointing thing was, the 4 that sold to one guy. Huh. I would have rather had 4 different customers.
Sure.
And that's all I sold, so I took them out because I was actually losing money. And then I emailed Steve at the Radio Attic and asked him if I could have a site. And he interviewed me, and you don't get on his site unless you qualify to his terms and his philosophy for repairing radios. And he accepted me, and I started on the Radio Attic. And I can't believe it. In 2.5 years, I sold 250 radios.
That's incredible.
It is. And I've sold them, you know, all over the world: Australia, Japan, Korea, Italy, Germany, England, Spain. And I will brag, I do good work. I'm very fussy, and that's the way I was taught. When I went through school, if you didn't have a wire on a right angle or a solder joint perfect, you failed that test. So I'm very fussy.
Well, you know, it's good to brag, and it's good to be proud that you do nice work. And, you know, it's been a while since he's been on. We're going to have him on hopefully again fairly soon. Joe's referring to Steve Adams from the Radio Attic, who was our very first guest here on Tube Talk. And the Radio Attic is a great resource for people looking for vintage radios. You can visit Joseph's section of the attic and look at some of his beautiful stuff. And well-polished, well-restored, it's all available for you. And Steve has been running that. He had a great year last year. I guess he sold well over 1,000 radios. So we're going to have him on to chat a little bit about that. But if anybody would like to see Joe's section of that site, it's radioattic.com. And you find Joe is prominently listed on the front page. And you can click on his section of the attic and check out what he's got to offer. Now, just a question. I'm always curious about this, and you know, these sets, when they're, you know, they're old to begin with. But do you find any manufacturers are easier or more difficult to work on, or does it really come down to how the radio's been stored or how it was treated, or more of the model, or do you find some manufacturers were easier to work on or service than others, Joe?
Yeah, there are some that are a lot easier to work on. And the thing that surprises me, I just finished up a General Electric the other day. It was a model, I think, 136. It has a very simple circuit in it, you know, I redid it. I replaced the capacitors. I tuned it up. And that radio picks up stations. The reception's phenomenal. I can't get over it. And then I'll open up another radio. It'll have 15 capacitors in it and all these different circuits. And it doesn't play as well as these simple radios. It just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing. You know, and it's funny. You know what I notice as well is, you know, sometimes... you know, especially with, you know, folks who collect, you know, extremely rare radios or very complex sets, you know, they have high tube counts and they're extremely involved, you know, and there's always this, you know, feeling that they're going to perform better than, you know, the small five or six tube sets. I have a couple of small RCA five tube sets that just outperform, you know, they have no reason to be as good as they are. You know, they're five tubes, they're probably fairly simple circuits. I know the speakers in some of them are particularly good. I have one that I'll listen to baseball games on. And, you know, the separation in the sound in the speaker between the crowd and the announcer and then the sounds of the game themselves, sometimes you can be very surprised. You'll get a very, you know, simple-looking little set, and it really outperforms something that you could put an awful lot of time in and seems particularly complicated, a 7- or 8-tube set that's, you know, pretty good, but it's a little disappointing when all is said and done.
Absolutely. The RCAs and the GEs with the simple circuits, the five-tube circuits, I find them to be excellent radios. And back in the 40s, they were your cheap radio. That's what the people could afford. And they, as far as I'm concerned, they play the best.
Now, with the introduction, especially, you know, post-war of the internal antennas, you know, sort of becoming a standard on a lot of these radios, you know, I have a little 6-tube RCA, and I pick up 820 AM occasionally, not every night, but I'll pick up 820 AM, which I don't think is more than 1,000 watts. I'll pick that up in Boston. That's coming out of New York City. And, you know, it's a real testament to how well some of those things were made. And that's one of the other things I, you know, I find a lot of people who I'll meet and I'll talk to about collecting, they're very surprised that, you know, you can pick up a lot of distant signals. And I explain to them that while people certainly did listen to their local stations, a lot of folks in the 40s and 50s, part of the fun of it then, and it's still kind of fun now, is to see just how far away you can pick something up from.
Yes, back in the 40s, they had clubs, and people would join to see how far they could get a station. And most of them just used the long wire antenna. Then when the loop antenna came out that they installed inside the radio, you can still get distant stations, but a long wire outside antenna does better. But it's a little more dangerous. You get hit by lightning that way.
You know, and it's fun, too. I know the my pals down at the New Jersey Antique Radio Club are in the process of computing their results. They just recently had a DX contest, which, you know, for those who aren't familiar with the term DX, is just means long-distance listening. And they were challenging their members to drag out their favorite sets and see what they could pick up on shortwave as well as on, you know, standard broadcast. And then apparently they submit some type of a log, and those go to the officers of the club. So I'm anxiously awaiting. They're going to fill me in on what some of the better catches were. But, you know, it's fun stuff, and it's just another angle on the hobby, which, you know, some people think collecting radios is really just, you know, buying and selling and swapping and restoring, and they don't really think so much of the listening end of things. And I was going to ask you, just, you know, in your neck of the woods, you're down Pennsylvania way, what's on the standard broadcast band these days down there? Do you have any music stations down your way? Is it all pretty much syndicated talk, or where's radio at down in your neck of the woods these days, Joe?
Well, my favorite station is WKOK in Sunbury. That's 1070 on the AM dial. And that comes in the strongest where I live. I can only pick up two stations here where I live very well. The second station plays music, mostly your oldies-type music all day. But WKOK, they have a very interesting morning local talk show on until 10 o'clock. And then they have syndicated Mike Smirkanish, and then they have a couple sports shows. But they're about the only two that I can get here where I am.
Now, I know you've mentioned, I don't know what kind of luck you have with it, if it's just an occasional, because you've actually mentioned it in, you know, I know you'll send a note out frequently when you sell a set, and you'll mention to folks if they are, you know, lucky enough, they might be able to pull in 740 out of Toronto at night, which has, in addition to good oldies music programs, they also play some old-time radio shows, which I'm very fond of. Do you ever pick that up down your way, or is that something that's just an occasional?
No, that almost nightly during the winter I can get it. And as you know, Paul, a lot of people don't understand. During the day, I'll get my local two stations, and that's about it. But at night, I can probably get 50 stations, and that has to do with sunspots and sun activity. And then at night, you have what you call bounce off the ionosphere. The signals actually go up in the sky, bounce back down, and that's how you pick up the long-distance stations. Like here in Pennsylvania, I can pick up Chicago. I can pick up some Georgia stations at night. And in the summertime, it's not as good at night either.
Yeah, you know, it's AM is basically ground wave, you know, during the day, meaning that the signal is just bouncing along at ground level. But then in the evenings, when the ionosphere's characteristics change a little bit, you get the wonder of skip. And, you know, I was down in Cape Cod earlier later last year in the summertime. And I was really surprised, and I don't know if it was just the house I was in or, the way things were configured with the way the electricity was coming into the house, but I brought down a little Philco six-tube set that I have pretty good luck on up here in the Boston area, and I didn't get much of anything. I got a little bit during the day, and usually when I'm down on the Cape, I get all the New York stations seem to come right up Long Island Sound, and they're very strong. This year, I had a terrible year down there, even at night, and but, you know, I'm just in the greater Boston area, and it's funny, on certain winter evenings especially, I'll get Toronto, I'll get Atlanta, I'll get Chicago. I haven't been able to get Philadelphia as well as I have in the past, and I don't know if that's just something going on in my neighborhood or what. But, you know, part of the fun at night especially is to test out your equipment, and it's a great part of the hobby. I still enjoy doing it, and it beats staring at a computer screen or watching TV or it's just a nice diversion, and it kind of makes you think back too to back in the 30s and the 40s when people were really anxious to kind of hear what was going on in other parts of the country, and that was the equivalent of their cable news. They tried to get in all these different cities.
Yes, that's what they did back then. If they were living in Boston, they would hope to get a Chicago station just to see what was going on out there, because they didn't know otherwise.
Now, you know, one thing I always try to ask folks who are on the show, do you have any favorites in your collection? I mean, do you have a particular set, or do you have a particular manufacturer you favor? I mean, do you collect them as well as sell them to your customers?
I don't really have a favorite set, but my problem is I like most of them. And I hate to sell them, but that's what the business I got into. It just amazes me when I see all this different art, I guess you could call it art, of how they made these radios back then. I mean, they're just beautiful. I think you probably got a chance to look at that $55,000 one I sent you a picture of the other day.
Yeah, the Stratosphere. You know, every radio collector's dream. Aye, aye, aye. That's just a work. It is a work of art. It's amazing stuff. And the other thing that's very, part of the allure of the whole thing, and it's hard to describe until you show it to somebody, is, a nicely lit dial light in a dark room. I know you have a little GE right now. It's an ivory color that you just recently put up on your site. And when you scroll through the pictures, many of the folks, and Joe included, on the attic will give you different angles, and they'll show you what it looks like at night if it has a dial light. And not only does the dial light up on that, Joe, but it seems like that whole front of the radio sort of has this nice, warm, soft glow to it. And it really is just something that's just fun to look at and makes it feel awful cozy on a cold winter night. That's a great little set there, that little GE.
Yeah, that is pretty, the way that lights up at night. Like you said, it gives a nice glow. And another thing I do, when somebody emails me about a radio and they ask me questions about it, I send them pictures of everything. I send pictures of the chassis, the speaker, the underneath, all the parts I replaced. I try to show that if they buy a radio from me, I do try to make it the best quality I can possibly make.
Well, that's probably another key to why you've sold so many in such a relatively short period of time. And, my pet peeve, I think, is when, the value engineers at these companies started to get involved in, you find a lot of, nice-sounding radios, but they're starting in the late 50s and in the 60s, they started to omit the dial lights because they probably saved, 15 cents in wire and in the bulb and a little extra time, you know, in the manufacture. And it just really bums me out when I find a nice playing, sort of a neat looking radio. No dial light. You know, what are they thinking about? So that's my pet peeve. What do you look for? Where do you find these sets? I mean, that you restore? Do you find them, you know, locally at swaps or you know, flea markets, or are you looking online? Where do you find the material that you work on that you bring back to life?
I'd say 99% of the radios I get, I buy on eBay. And I look very closely. They have to have a perfect case, like no chips, no cracks, no marks. If they don't work, that's okay. I can usually get them fixed. But they have to have a pristine cabinet because it's like I tell people, if you're collecting porcelain figurines, and let's say that porcelain figurine has a chip on the ear, you really don't want that figurine because it's damaged. It's not proper. So I make sure every case I sell is a darn near perfect case.
And as far as what's your polish of choice on your plastic and your Bakelite? I know you've told me before. What do you find gives it the best shine?
Well, on the plastic and Bakelites, now I clean them up very well with Meguiar's swirl polish that you get for cars. But then when I want to, what the final polish I use, this is unbelievable, it's Pledge spray for specialty services. That just brings out a beautiful shine on the radios, and then on the wood radios, I use Scott's Liquid Gold.
You know, it's funny that you mentioned Meguiar's because I was trying to clean up a basket case of a Bakelite, and I didn't use the Meguiar's. I wound up using it was a turtle wax. It's probably similar stuff. And I said, well, you know, I've tried everything else. Why don't I try this? Because I had some out in the garage. And put it on and let it set for a little bit and then took it off with a damp cloth. And, you know, I'll be darned. It really came out nice. And, you know, one of the things with some of these old Bakelite cases, too, I remember I was cleaning one up and I was getting all of this stuff coming off and it was all brown. And I'm told a guy, one of the old timers I know at our club up here, and I said, you know, I'm getting all this stuff. I said, is this the pigment? Is it coming out of the plastic or the Bakelite? He goes, chances are, he said, that could have been in a bar room or a barbershop or in somebody's home who was a heavy smoker. He said, a lot of times you'll find these things are impregnated with nicotine. I'm like, wow, I never even thought about that.
That's exactly right. That's what I found out when I started cleaning them. And I do use that turtle wax product also. I have that and the Meguiar's. But I've cleaned radios, and the rag gets brown and brown, and that's what it is. It's nicotine.
You know, it's just something in sort of the, you know, with the emphasis on non-smoking. You know, I can still, as a kid, vaguely remember advertisements on TV for cigarettes and all. But, you know, I'll tell people who are a little younger, I said, yeah, you know, this is nicotine-soaked. And they go, really? You know, they really have a sort of a hard, and it's probably more often the case than not, you know, given, you know, our history as a country. But now, how's the new year off? How are you doing sales-wise? How many have you sold so far in 2012? Are you off to a good start?
I did very well before Christmas. I sold, I think, 15 radios in December, and that was a lot of people buying them for gifts for other people. And I think in January up until now, I probably sold about 12.
No, it's not bad for after Christmas. You know, it's kind of the doldrums of the winter. That's pretty good.
Yeah, I'm really surprised. And I do have several clients. One of them is a man out in Hollywood, California. He owns a radio company. And he had me send, I think it was 9 radios out to these different executives throughout the country. And some of them went to advertising executives on Madison Avenue in New York City. And I do know that the head of ABC Radio in New York City, he has one of my radios.
Well, that's great.
And, oh, it is. It's wonderful.
That's a thrill.
It is. And what I would do for him, I would wrap them up and then ship them out from my house to these people. And he would send me a cart to put in with it.
Sure. That's super. That's interesting. Now, one of the other things you shared with me once, and I thought was a very novel and really kind of a nice thing to do, too, is that you had, I don't know if you had a client who was buying them or if it was a family member, but that the, you know, a restored radio would wind up going to a senior center or a senior citizen's home, and that folks really would get a kick out of being able to listen to a radio like they had around the house when they were a kid. And it was a great conversation piece, and they got a lot of enjoyment out of that. Did you ever hear from anybody doing that anymore?
I did sell one to one senior center like that, and it's still working. I mean, because I told them if anything happens to it, to call
sure.
me. But I haven't sold many like that. But I have sold to younger people who bought grandpa or grandma, 80 years old, a radio because they want to buy them something. They're married, say, 50 years. What do you buy them? They got everything.
Right, right. You buy them a little piece of their past, and that's kind of a really neat thing to get, too. So, well, hey, Joe, I really appreciate you coming on. And if anybody is interested, again, that's Radio Attic. This is Joe Rebar, R-E-B-A-R, who's joining us. You can check out his booth, check out his wares, and take a look at some of the really neat stuff. And, you know, I'd suggest anybody who's interested in getting a start collecting might want to take a very close look at some of the nice sets you have. They certainly look very well, and it sounds like seems like you really do a great job on them as well electronically. So it's a good way for somebody to start. Joseph, thanks for being with us tonight. I appreciate it, and good luck on the attic in the future.
Thank you very much, Paul. It was nice talking to you.
Take care now.
Bye.
Ellington with Joya Sherrill handling the vocal duty. Thanks again for joining us on Tube Talk. This is the zenith of the independently produced good radio experience. We're glad you're with us tonight. We hope you enjoyed our conversation with Joe Rebar. You can find his goods on the Radio Attic. And if you'd like to email us here at the show, it's tubetalk1@gmail.com. Here's a little more Bing Crosby.
Mr. Grouch sat on his gloomy couch,
told us that the end of the world was near.
My happy heart rose with a start, hollering, let's get out of here.
We gotta stay with the happy people. Have you fun, live in the land of joy.
Stay with the happy people. Face the sun, life is a Christmas toy.
Down through the countless ages, tears have been contagious. And take it from me that misery is just a-looking around for company.
So stay, stay, stay with the happy people.
We gotta stay happy.
Don't wrinkle your brow, it's strictly out of style.
Just stay with the people who love to wear a smile.
We gotta stay, stay with the happy people.
Sun, life is a Christmas toy.
Down through the countless ages, tears have been contagious. And take it from me that misery is looking all around for company.
So stay, stay, stay with the happy people, with the happy people.
Don't wrinkle your brow,
it's strictly out of style.
Just stay, stay, stay with the people who love, love, love to wear a smile.
That was Bing with Ella Fitzgerald.
It had to be you. Yes, it had to be you. I've traveled around, finally found somebody who could make me be true, could make me feel blue, could make me be glad just to be sad thinking of you. Some others I've seen might never be mean, might never be cross, but try to be boss, they wouldn't do. For nobody else gives me a thrill. With all your faults, I love you still. It had to be you, wonderful you. It had to be you. Yes, it had to be you. Oh, it had to be you. I've traveled around, and I finally found somebody who could make me be true, could make me be blue, would make me be glad just to be sad thinking about you. Some others I've seen might never be me, might never be cross, try to be boss, but they ain't gonna do. For nobody else gives me a thrill. With all your faults, I love you still. It had to be you, wonderful you. Oh, it had to be you.
It had to be you, Bing Crosby, with Red Nichols on the cornet. And just remember, folks, real radio's glow in the dark. It is our duty to keep them going and keep them glowing. Here at Tube Talk, we are dedicated to the preservation of our musical and electronic past. We love the world of tube radio. And I guess as Bing Crosby would say, it had to be tubes. It had to be tubes. Now you know why I never went into singing and am just a humble vintage radio talk program host. Well, folks, as we have talked, we're happy to read listeners' mail, emails, suggestions, stories about great restoration projects, their restoration philosophies, etc., etc. And this falls into the mailbag category. This is a snail mail piece that we have received from a very dedicated and loyal listener. Thank you, Dave. And we appreciate this. We're going to share with you, this particular listener had a listing in his extensive files of radio history and memorabilia that he wished to share with us here. And it's various NBC News achievements. And it goes back to 1927. So we're going to rattle off a few of these great events in the world of radio here and share them with you. 1927, January 1st. First coast-to-coast radio network program, the Rose Bowl game from Pasadena, California. The network was 19 stations. Imagine that. What else do we got here? June 11th, exclusive broadcast of Charles Lindbergh's return from his transatlantic solo flight of 50-station network, largest to that time. Absolutely amazing. September 22nd, 1927, an NBC News exclusive. The famous Tunney Dempsey bout at Soldiers Field in Chicago, certainly a big event. Let's see what else we've got. This is one of my favorites here. This is 1929, August 12th. Parachute jumper equipped with an NBC 25-pound, 2-watt pack transmitter leaps from a plane at Roosevelt Field to test apparatus possibilities. He broadcast via NBC as he floated to Earth. There is no mention made as to whether that was his last jump. It may have been. I don't know. It is not covered here. 1930, March 11th, first broadcast conversation between NBC in New York and Admiral Byrd in Wellington, New Zealand. And this is one of my favorites here. We've got September 16th on a more somber note, 1938, during the Munich crisis, when atmospheric conditions cut off broadcasters from immediate access to events in Europe, NBC News sets up a radio circuit from Europe to Africa to South America and finally to New York. Through this circuit, America hears Prime Minister Chamberlain announce his meeting, fateful meeting, with Adolf Hitler. And here's another one from that time frame, 1939. December 17th, exclusive broadcast of an actual scuttling of a warship in wartime, the German Graf Spee from Montevideo, Uruguay. Yes, radio is not only a part of our popular culture, it is also part of our history. Here's Frankie.
I met her dancing to the Castle Rock. I held her tight and danced around the clock. We rocked to romance to the Castle Rock. She kissed me and I kissed my heart goodbye. I felt like I was drifting across the sky. We rocked to heaven to the Castle Rock. Music was soft and low, setting me all aglow. Holding it to my heart, how could I dream we'd part? Suddenly she was gone, leaving me dreaming on. Now every time they play the Castle Rock, I'll take myself a walk around the block. Till she comes back to dance the Castle Rock. Go get him, Harry, for old times.
Hey,
to the Castle Rock. Now every time they play the Castle Rock, I'll take myself a walk around the block till she comes back to dance the Castle Rock. Till she comes back to dance the Castle Rock.
Frank Sinatra with a swinging Harry James on that horn, huh? Only here on Tube Talk, AM 1330. We're the show for you, the vintage radio collector, the music lover. Thanks for listening. If you enjoy our program, please tell your friends. We'd love to get some more listeners. We'd love to know you're out there, too. Our email is tubetalk1@gmail.com. Ah, yes. Nancy Wilson.
I left my heart in San Francisco. Little cable cars climb halfway to the stars. The morning fog may chill the air, but I don't care. My love waits there. Oh, above the blue and windy sea, when I come home to you, San Francisco.
Isn't that so nice? And she certainly sings a heck of a lot better than I do. I think you'll agree with that. And we hope to see you out at Radio 43 out at the Westford Regency Hotel on February 19th, 8 a.m. to 12 noon. It is the Northeast radio event for the wintertime. So this is brought to you by the New England Antique Radio Club. We'd love to see you. Thanks for listening. Have a great night and a great week. We appreciate your listenership. Good evening now.
Hey.
See your eye away.
Opinions expressed on all WRCA programs are those of the program producers and do not express the views of WRCA, its staff, or management.
Beasley Broadcast Group. This is 1330 WRCA, Watertown, Boston.
The opinions expressed on all WRCA programs are those of the program producers and do not express the views of WRCA, its staff, or management.